know when you experience something, if this was something that you were going to get paid back from, karmic debt, or you were just the victim of a wrong act. So that basically is karma.
Okay. I mean, sowing and reaping?
Yeah, but as you sow, so shall you reap.
Okay.
But you don't have to go out and hug everybody, and you don't have to go up and hug that person who gave you a smack in the mouth at the bar last Friday night for no reason, you know. But really, what goes around comes around. And then we move on to number two, which is love. And love really is the cornerstone of everything we have as human beings, as life forces. Without love, all the money and all the academic and success that we have at work or at college, whatever, if we don't have anyone to share all that with, we very much lead a hollow, empty life. So the universal law really is, I mean, it really is the cornerstone of who we are. And without love in our lives, while we're incarnated and afterwards, we really struggle. And then number three, just to back up a sec here. So love and karma.
Good. I thought you left love kind of quickly there, Cindy. I'm glad you backed up a bit.
Yeah. Karma and love are both spiritual, the universal laws, but they focus on the spiritual side and the living dimension side. So you'll have karma and love in this lifetime and in your afterlife. Well, your afterlife is really your real life, because that's where you belong, is in the spiritual dimensions. So I mean, love is the most beautiful feeling you can have in the world, and there isn't a feeling, you know, $50 billion can never replace the feeling of love for someone or in receiving love yourself. You really can't put enough importance on love. You will feel far, far, far better in life if you have love around you as opposed to hate and anger and jealousy and greed.
Hey, do you address the spiritual aspect of love in your book at all, Sandy?
Well,
we understand love, you know, between people and in relationships, certainly, and
touch on a little bit, Jeff, as when we pass on, you're reunited with those that you've shared lifetimes with and your former relatives and stuff, and it's a feeling of love and pure bliss.
I was leading the witness, Your Honor, when I asked that question about the spiritual dimension of love. Of course, you know, from many of the traditions, you know, God is love. Or love is God, and
yeah, to love thyself is to love God. I mean, that's head in charge, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I mean, why not?
You know, I hear, you know, that from teachers on occasion, I will hear, you know, you need to love God. It's so important to love God. But we need to know God to love God. I can't love what I don't know. If I don't have a spiritual connection, if I haven't. You used the term earlier. If I haven't become aware, if I haven't awakened to the presence of God or the presence of God in my own heart, then that love is going to be a purely a physical and sometimes a superficial love. But an awakening to love in our heart, that, you know, I speak of the mystic heart, the meditation that I practice and I teach is called mystic heart awareness,
uh-huh.
and that is embodied in a loving awareness. I mean, we have that loving awareness of on a physical level, but there's a loving awareness of a connection that the masters speak of
yeah.
of a loving connection to God. Do you get into that at all in your book or plan to?
Well, I think more in book three we're going to go into meditations and stuff, and we'll focus more on that. But I'm a firm believer that by increasing you don't have to embrace universal learning, but if you understand this awareness of something else and understand an awareness of a creator or a higher power that's behind all of this that you're currently experiencing, by embracing your life and loving your life, and even if you're going through good and bad situations, and I keep on coming back to money because here in the United States, everything seems to revolve around money. And people judge good life or bad life through money. You can't take your money with you, and you're never going to. So whatever you're experiencing in your life, just by embracing your life, just like Jesus said, love your life and love everyone else and embrace it with a passion, huh?
So is that simply a matter of a logical choice, Sandy, or is there something that moves us into that, or is that do you believe that is one of the value pieces of meditation, that we become more sensitive to to
love? I think you become more sensitive. I think you become more sensitive to universal energy, and the universal laws, and you become more sensitive to guidance. And guidance is passed through the form of universal energy. Your emotions are universal energy. This conversation is universal energy. The phones we're using is universal energy. So everything is energy. And you really begin to increase your awareness and become attuned to these things.
And I believe that just to editorialize a bit on that, Sandy, that as we spoke about earlier, as we meditate, as we begin to become more aware, as we attune to that, as we feel a divine guidance, if you will. I know you didn't use that term, I just did, but I know in your book you speak a lot about inner and outer guidance. My experience has been with a lot of my students, and certainly in my own life, that as I spend time in meditations, I spend time in just allowing myself to feel part of everything that's going on. As those feelings begin to come, there's a sensitivity that grows that brings a tremendous gratitude, and you know, gratitude and love are certainly first cousins, if not siblings. You know that as we appreciate our life, that appreciation can be so simple. It can return us to a childlike way of living. Appreciate the breeze moving the leaves in a tree, or appreciate the smell of a flower, or appreciate a ladybug that we see on the windowsill. Those are silly examples, but that appreciation that brings a gratitude, that brings a loving heart, seems to cause us to blossom, and I'm just kind of affirming what you're saying and running along beside it, that attunement, that awareness to a higher mind, to spirit and soul, and allowing you, the way you've differentiated, that we are tuning into to guides or spiritual guides that that teach us or move us along through life. I know that part of the premise of your book is that this life experience is a learning experience.
Yeah, it is, and every day after I'm finished my meditation, I always say a thank you prayer, and I thank God for my lifetime on earth.
Great.
For the opportunity, okay, and I say it.
We're on the same page.
All right. So we're still talking about the universal laws here. So we move on to emotional control. Now, these universal laws, they're basically, you know, not something you're going to find it's in a tablet. They're just basically guidelines, and I formatted these 12, Jeff, along with the concept of universal energy to help people understand their whole existence. So they kind of jump around a little bit, but here we've got emotional control, and this is more referred to as when you're living here. So many of us, especially passionate people as well, when you can't control your emotions, you commit actions that you didn't really mean at the time. But when you're not in control of your emotions, you can really throw a spanner in the works into your lifetime. and all this guideline is saying, hey, just be aware of controlling your emotions and not giving in to hate and anger and revenge. Okay, look, if something happens to you in your life, there's no harm doing coming home, blowing off steam for half an hour, and then going, well, you know what, I'm not going to let that person do that to me again, or I'm never going to do that again. But don't sit and waste days and weeks and dwelling on all this negative emotions and energy, because it will just consume you.
Right. You know, I think any of us listening to you about that, Sandy, can flash among people that we know or don't even know that we've seen or have come in contact with, who seem to lack this emotional control, or that they seem to be in a rage or in a complaining mode all the time. What do you suggest? How do people become more aware? How do they control their emotions? Is there some specific recommendations that you make as part of this Universal Learning Series?
Yeah, the first thing you have to do is actually realize you're doing something wrong. And that's very hard for us human beings to take. That, okay, it's actually my fault. And you'll learn that, I'm sure you do, Jeff, when you develop the heart like a son theory. You know, you're the one that made that decision to act like that. You didn't have to. And so first of all, we have to realize, okay, we're doing something wrong here. So that's the first, as far as I'm concerned, the major obstacle out of the way. Then, when these people start focusing down, starting to meditate, just if they're beginners, just do it for 10 minutes, 5 days a week in the morning before they belt out the door to work, and then they'll start to want to do it more because it makes them feel good. And slowly but surely, their pattern will change from negative thinking, and it'll start to swing around slowly but surely to positive thinking. But you always, I think, have to keep on reminding yourself not to dwell on negative thoughts. And it's very, very easily done.
It's an interesting premise that you start with, that we take personal responsibility, right? This to lose control, to not have emotional control, is an error on my part, that I must take responsibility for that and work on that. There's a interesting piece of scripture in Christian scripture, the book of Galatians, that says the fruit of the Spirit, and it lists 9 different things. It's the fruit of the Spirit, or the fruit of attuning to Spirit, and the last one is self-control. Everyone knows the fruit of the Spirit is love and peace and joy and patience and kindness and tolerance, long-suffering. I notice, and I'm kind of amused, that the last one is self-control, because I've found in my life, I like to speak to my own personal experiences, but and as well in other people, that we may become spiritually aware, become well-attuned, and leading life well, but that self-control, there's temptation. I think there's great wisdom in the prayer that Jesus taught, to not be led into temptation, that we can lose that self-control. We can be tempted out of that. And it's just interesting to me that takes, as you were starting to say, that takes a certain maturity. It takes a definitive maturity, that there's a maturation in meditation, that we find ourselves not only becoming more sensitive, but there are little maturation leaps where we actually mature a bit in our view, that we stop taking things so personally, that we begin to be more kind and compassionate with other people, and mm-hmm. and that self-control is one that's a very difficult one. So I just wanted to come in and really pound that nail a few times with my own hammer.
it can wreck your work career in 2 seconds flat.
And certainly relationships, absolutely.
Yeah, and we all do it, and it's one that I am no exception to.
Well, I think those of us who teach, they say that we teach most what we need to learn, so I think we've all come along that road in order to have some clarity about the results of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, controlling your emotions really is, and also your thoughts, even though you don't say anything, it's very important that the listener understands this. Even though you don't say, I hate you, I can't stand you. You're thinking negative thoughts about that person. That energy emanates from you and goes out into the universe and gathers other negative energy, and it snowballs. It comes back to you, and then you get even more worked up, more angrier, and you vent even more negative thoughts towards that person. Or
wow, that's a powerful way to look at it.
Yeah, and it grows. There's no stopping it. So it's very, very important. Well, there is a way of stopping it, but it gets stronger and stronger and stronger. And you know what? There's people, as you hit on, Jeff, there, that live their lives just in a negative mindset because they don't know anything else.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know any other way. So we move on to number 4, which is action and effect, which is more, again, for your lifetime on earth, and it's basically every decision and everything you do will have an effect, whether you have a glass of water or maybe you make that call for that date that night or for that new job interview or you commit a wrongful act and you end up in jail or you have to go to court. Basically, it's a guideline, guys. Anything you do is just, it's going to be an effect, whether it be you perceive it good or bad. And then we move on to number 5.
I just want to, if I may, comment, because I'd like to do it.
Yeah?
Because I love where we're going with it. On that action and effect, I think that there are two sides to that, as there are most things, as a double-edged sword, that we take action that has an effect in the world that's very positive, and obviously we take action that has an effect that's very negative. I think many of us have had people who have come to us in our lives that we may have had some contact with, a relationship with earlier, even years before, who have come to us and said, well, you don't know how much you helped me with this or that you said. And it's like, it just stuns us. So we just don't realize that we had that effect on a life in a positive way. I think that we fail to realize that what a positive effect we can have. And of course, the other side of that coin is that we also can hurt people quite badly without recognizing that we've had an effect. And it comes back to the emotional control, certainly, and these do build on that. But I wanted to just mention that it's just so powerful that we do take responsibility. And I love where you went with that even right to our thinking, that the thoughts we have, that we can choose to have that loving awareness. We can choose. I enjoy telling my students that to practice this week, we'll have a week's practice of loving awareness, where it relates to this action and effect, where when you're in traffic and someone pulls up beside you in traffic, just recognize that person has an emotional makeup, as we all do, that is similar to all of us, that they have had tender moments, and they've done acts of loving kindness and very positive things in this world, and they're worthy of your love, and so to send them a loving awareness. And I'd love to say that even if it's a burly truck driver who pulls up with a wife beater on, who looks over at you and growls, "What are you looking at?" that you say "you" because you're so beautiful, that you just stay in that place of loving awareness, that it can have just a wonderful effect. And I have had tremendous feedback from people who come back in with huge smiles and say, "Wow, I can melt people." That's the term people use. They come in and say, just to be conscious for the week of being in loving awareness, to walk in a store and just passing people, just to send out a tender, loving thought to them, knowing that grandmother that you see with a little scowl on her face in the shopping cart who cut you off with 27 items going out of the express lane is a beautiful person who has done beautiful, tender, wonderful, compassionate, loving things in her life, and she's worthy of your love. And it just is so good for our own heart, and I believe that action has an effect out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you. Okay, number 5 is preordination. Now, this is more of a spiritual guideline. There's sometimes in your life, you may have experienced this, and some of the listeners may have, when you experience a situation or you're in an event, you go, "Whoa," and you have this deja vu flashback. "Where? I've never even been here. I can't remember this person saying this to me. I've never even met this person before until today. So why do I remember this? Where did that come from?" And also, it doesn't necessarily have to be deja vu as well. There's certain things or certain patterns that evolve in our life that's meant to be. And I knew from a young age that I was going to live in the United States. I knew it. I desperately wanted it. And come hell, rain, or shine, I was going to arrive here legally. And I did. And when I look back on it, that was a preordained event. But there was also an event when I was 10 years old, and my mother and father separated. And I can never forget it when my mother told me that she was no longer living with Dad. That was the phrase she used. And I had a flashback as clear as day to something right out of the Hollywood movies. And, it was just something else. I mean, it couldn't have worked in my eyesight any better. And that's where that comes from. So I think we're all born with predetermined goals and lessons that the guys and ourselves, because we chose to come here for the benefit of our own spiritual growth. So there's going to be certain preordained events and goals that we're going to experience.
Well, that's an interesting comment you just made, Sandy. We chose to come here.
We chose to come here.
We went to the head guy and said, "Listen, I'd like to do another loop on Earth."
Well, your spiritual guides and the Creator. I mean, there's no time. I'm going to touch on the universal law of time. There's no time in the spiritual dimension. So we have all the time in the universe to talk about these things.
Okay.
For your benefit, we think you need to have another go at this, or perhaps move on to something else. Or, as I said in my book as well, you're allowed to incarnate and just have a lifetime of just happiness and just see what happens as well. That's more for some other spirits I feel that have attained a lot of learning, and who have absorbed that learning and truly understood it. But basically, yes, we're all here, I believe, with preordained experiences. And why are we all different? Why do we all have different tastes? You know, we have two twins look chalk and cheese, you know, okay, if they're identical as well. She likes this and she likes that. Why? We all look different. We all have different goals, ambitions, and, you know, one man wants to work in the Air Force as a technician. The other twin brother wants to be a rock and roll star. I mean...
Well, I noticed along that line, Sandy, I've noticed in my lifetime that different children have such, you know, there are so many, they have such different makeup and their personalities evolve so quickly that there'll seem to be children who are fussy, you know, who have a difficult time of life, who seem angry just out of the womb. They just come into the world and they seem angry and upset and displeased with the world. And there are others who are so mellow and so comfortable and so easy as children. And that would certainly be a case. I certainly don't know this field directly at all, but that to me gives me pause for wonder that does this person bring in a history? Do we actually have past lives and we actually choose to come in again? It's just interesting to consider.
Well, that, Jeff, brings us on to number six, incarnation characteristics, and you practically just explained that. Everything we learn, now, let's make a differentiation here. I may learn how to operate an Excel spreadsheet in this lifetime, but when I pass on, yes, that knowledge is with me. But when I'm reborn, either as a human being or elsewhere, maybe another life form on Earth or another world, that practical brain knowledge will not be with me. But all the events and all the emotional experiences that I learn for the development of my soul and all my characteristic traits go with me into the afterworld.
Then they do go with you said. Okay.
And then they come back in with me when I'm born again. So if I'm bad-tempered and angry and I just can't get that under control, and I've got to face another lifetime of being bad-tempered and angry and see if I can get under control, I'm probably going to be born a loud, angry baby that I'm agitated that here I am again, facing this again, oh no, help me, you know.
Yeah.
And so I believe that your spiritual characteristics come with you. And that's why I think everyone's different.
Okay.
Do you want to talk about that anymore? Do we want to move on to number seven?
No, that's fine. Whatever you're saying, it's probably a good idea to move seven. We have about 10 minutes to wrap up. So
All right. The rest are more straightforward. Protection. You know, a lot of people say, why doesn't God protect us? Why does he let this happen? Or why does God can be a she or can be an it? So we'll just use he for familiarity. The living dimensions are like a training ground, and planet Earth is a part of the Milky Way galaxy, which is a part of this living dimension. So it's a training ground.
Okay.
It's a living, breathing sanctuary, and human beings are responsible. Human beings, the listener must clearly understand this. Human beings cause the events on this world, no one else.
Right.
And then you have Mother Nature. Okay, that's one thing.
God gets blamed for a lot of stuff that we do.
Yeah.
Two cars crash into each other, they just can't occupy the same space. It's a law of physics.
Yeah,
to
that's
say,
right.
How did God let that happen? Well, it's kind of a man-made thing. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you've got the living dimensions, a living, breathing sanctuary. So the laws of physics and the cosmos, that just intertwines. And then you have the human beings on Earth, more on the small decision-makings that go on planet Earth.
Okay.
But this is not your home. It's not. You belong in the spiritual dimension, and when you're in the spiritual dimensions, in your true universal state, you are totally protected. Nothing can harm you. So that's why I tell people about the universal law of protection. Just that little bit of reassurance that yes, you are protected. And when you pass on from this world, you are an eternal spirit. You cannot cease to exist, and you never will. And that brings us on to...
Can I just stop on protection? I just seem to have a thing, and I'll let you move on to... But you mentioned guides as one of the three things that operate in our physical life.
Mm-hmm.
Are there times, it certainly seems, and I think people have this in their life, when we do have protection, that there are spiritual guides or angels, if you will, that will stop us from turning out into traffic when we missed our rearview mirror, happen to miss someone coming by us, or a certain protection? Is that, do you have any experience with that or any clarity about that? That there is some protection here on Earth?
Yeah. The spiritual guides are with you, and they're here to guide and protect you. But you are the person that turns the steering wheel. You're the one that presses the accelerator. So when you have that feeling of don't turn left or don't turn right, or you get this funny feeling like, I don't want to go out to that bar tonight. I'll just stay at home. I'll play a game, whatever. And you find out there was a massive brawl in that bar that night. The next day, someone got glassed, and there was an ambulance, and there was police there. So in a way, they were protecting you there. But it still left the human being to make the decisions.
Yeah, we can ignore that, boys.
Yeah.
I mean, many of us have said, should I be doing this, and gone ahead and done it, and paid the price.
Yeah, and then we within yourself if you shouldn't have done something or not. And that brings us on, we're talking about protection, and back to time, the universal law, or two-time rather, the universal law of time. Here in the living dimensions, there needs to be some record of time, because our bodies don't last. The life forms that we incarnate into, they don't last, they're not indefinite, so therefore it's logical that some sense of time exists in this living dimension. And in the spiritual dimensions, in heaven, which people are more familiar with, there is no time.
Right.
There just isn't. And then that moves us on to guidance, which we've probably been talking about, right, since the first one, since karma, that spiritual guides are born in. You have one, always one to be with you at all times. And this can be a former soulmate or someone you've known in a lifetime.
So you said, I'm sorry, Sandy, you said we have one like primary guide? Or?
Yeah,
okay.
That's always with you. And sometimes then guides change during a lifetime. That spirit may choose to incarnate into a life form itself, or may go move on and work on with someone else.
Our guide gets promoted? Where'd my guide go? Oh, you got promoted. You got a new one.
Yeah, or demoted.
Or demoted, oh no.
Yeah, and then something else will come in and guide you. You may have more than one, too. I certainly believe right now that in the last 3 years of my life, I've had three or four with me at all times.
Mm-hmm.
The information that flows around and all that, everything that's been happening.
Now, you speak of inner and outer guidance. Just because we're on guidance, you mentioned the outer. There's also an inner guidance refer to in your book?
Yes. The outer guidance is your spiritual guides. The inner guidance is your own higher mind, which is your spirit, which is you. You're the eternal spirit, I believe, consists of your higher mind and your soul. And your higher mind's kind of the processor. It sorts out the information, that the guidance coming in from your spiritual guides and your feelings of intuition. And your soul's kind of like your memory bank. Or like a sponge, it absorbs all your gut feelings and all your emotions that you've learned in previous lifetimes and this lifetime. So that's how I break up the spirit into your higher mind and your soul. And inner guidance will come from remembrance of past lives or remembrance of an experience of learning in the spiritual world, in the spiritual dimension, because there's learning that goes on there too. And you may think, let's stop it right here. Some of the listeners may be thinking, well, why can't we just all learn it in the spiritual dimensions? It'd be easy. Well, what's the point of learning if it's going to be easy? And what's the point of incarnating into a life form if you know all the answers during a lifetime? It's like taking an exam with the answer sheet right in front of you. Not very fulfilling, is it?
Okay.
So there's no point in that. So the guidance comes from outer and inner. And outer is from your spiritual guides and the energy of the universe. And your inner guidance is from your own higher mind. Not your physical brain, but your own spiritual higher mind.
Right.
And then we move on to learning, universal learning, law of learning, which is really the purpose of our existence in the living dimensions, is to learn the ways of the Creator. And this learning is going to be eternal, meaning that, and it's subject to revocation, which means, like, let's say, we're just talking a lot about human emotions here. In this book, well, this book is written for people on Earth, and we're all here on Earth, so that's what we're talking about. But I think there's an endless and infinite amount of learning, and there is no goal, there is no end goal as well. But the learning is eternal, and let's say I've become a very patient spirit. You know, over the last six or seven lifetimes, I've really demonstrated patience. And then I have a lifetime I just go off the rails big time, and I succumb to negative emotions and energy, and I become impatient, arrogant. I have to learn all that again. So just because you learn it in one lifetime doesn't mean to say, okay, that's off the checklist. You know, you don't have to, never have to do that again. I believe you're always constantly learning and evolving and coming back to that emotional control and action and effect. You just always need to be aware of them. And then we move on to restoration. Really, it's more...
There's restoration. That's good.
Yeah, for the living dimensions, all things come to an end. But you will never come to an end, nor will those spiritual dimensions. This is a living dimension.
And we're coming to an end of our show. I hope to have you on again, Sandy. It's really been interesting. I love the model that you put together. It's great reading. I know that we can find your book on Amazon.com. The title is Your Never-Ending Life, Book 1 of the Universal Learning Series by Sandy Andrew. Find it on Amazon.com. And a lot of information by Andrew, a lot of wonderful reviews on the back of the book. Sandy, I thank you so much for your patience and for your thoroughness today. I really enjoyed listening to you, and I'm sure we'll talk again.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right, thank you. And thanks for listening to Sundays with Papa Jeff. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program. And we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.